BFFT. From the PacWest Center in downtown Portland, presented by High Caliber Millwrights, here's John Canzano with a bald-faced truth.
I always love running into my good friend Jerry Brewer. Known him for a long time. You read him, and you know him from the Washington Post, where he is a sports columnist, national writer there. It's a guy who is a Kentucky Journalism Hall of Famer. Spent some time at the Seattle Times, lives in the Pacific Northwest, so he's like you and me. Jerry Brewer, boots on the ground in the Super Bowl city, joining us now. How long have you been there? Not very long.
Not long enough to have a drink, John.
We should do that. We should go, hey, go belly up right now and let's have a good conversation. take our listeners through it, because, like, you know this, your readers, my listeners, they don't often get to go to a Super Bowl. So what is it like to fly in on, like, a Thursday? You arrive at the airport. What's the scene? Take us through that.
Yeah, John, normally I would come in on, like, a Sunday or Monday, Tuesday at the latest. So I'm here when it's pretty quiet. And then you just kind of see the Super Bowl converge on a city. This time I'm coming in right in the mix. Like the airport was buzzing. I mean, you really felt like you were descending upon something. It took me 30 minutes to get an Uber, which is a ridiculously long time in New Orleans. Not for other cities, but in New Orleans, it's a ridiculously long time. But everybody's just in good spirits, loving the weather. You can tell that people have come to party and have a good time. So the security presence at this one is high, but hopefully people still enjoy the whole festivities like they normally do.
This matchup, Kansas City and Philadelphia, I think it's complicated for, like, fans who don't have a rooting interest, because, you know, you got to either root for Patrick Mahomes to do something that hasn't been done, or you're rooting for the Eagles, and, you know, those Eagles fans are complicated. That's a complicated fan base, and Nick Sirianni and the tush push. How does this matchup feel to you as you watch the storylines kind of unfold?
Yeah, it feels like another great one. I mean, the Chiefs have only played great Super Bowls. The one that they've won two by a field goal, one of them in overtime, and then the other one, their first one over the Niners. That game was 31-20, but deceiving, because they had to come back from double digits, and then they scored one at the end that kind of skewed how that game went. The Niners dominated most of that game. I think what's going to be different in this one, John, is that if the Chiefs get behind by double digits in this Super Bowl, they could get blown out a la how Tom Brady and the Bucks blew them out in Tampa. They can't lose connection to this Philadelphia team. Philadelphia is man for man better than them, more talented than them. They're more dynamic across their entire roster. But what does Philadelphia not have? They don't have the know-how. They don't have Patrick Mahomes, even though Hurts is a good quarterback. They don't have the best player on the planet. And they don't have just the core of guys who have seen it all and are not going to be afraid of the moment. And I think that's why you still give the Chiefs a slight edge, because the Super Bowl is old hat to them. And they're not going to come in here and do anything crazy. You're going to have to beat them. And I would, quite honestly, John, I think you have to beat the tar out of them. Give them no hope whatsoever, because they've just been through everything and they're not going to panic in the moment.
Yeah, there's something about that poise and Andy Reid, Patrick Mahomes, the whole Chiefs team. They sort of they find a way. I said that last segment. You don't want to be punting the ball with 1:30 to go and Mahomes about to go on offense and you're up by two. Like, you know, you, that's a loss. You know, up by six, that's a loss. The Jalen Hurts, Saquon Barkley. I mean, Saquon Barkley's so interesting to me, Jerry, because I don't know if there's been a more impactful trade. This almost feels like an NBA-like trade, where guy comes to a new team, gets signed by a new team. The best acquisition of the offseason, clearly Saquon Barkley.
Yeah, I think Saquon, you know, signing that free agent deal, it was 3 years, $37 million, $26 million guaranteed. I think it's the biggest free agency bargain, one of the biggest in the history of sports. You know, certainly in the NFL, when you talk about acquiring a guy at a position that people say has lost its value, and then him coming to a team that's already been to a Super Bowl. This is the Eagles' third Super Bowl in 8 years. And their second in 3 years, and taking a team that even last year when they fell apart down the stretch, at one point in the year they were 9 or 10 and 1 before they fell apart, a really damn good team, and they've become just utterly reliant on this guy who is the perfect fit in everything that they do, and he illuminates everything that they're great at on offense, particularly that offensive line. I've just never seen somebody come in and be so integral. It kind of reminds me on some level, John, like when Reggie White came to the Green Bay Packers, and just what he meant for their defense being so dominant. It's a little bit similar from a Philly standpoint of when they made that deal and acquired T.O. and went to the Super Bowl in the Donovan McNabb era and lost to the Patriots. But the difference being, Saquon's been healthy all year. T.O. broke his leg and had to come back from that, and that kind of stalled the Eagles' momentum, 15, 16 years ago? 20, actually, it's like 20-something years ago. Like, we're old men now.
I like that. Jerry Brewer with us, Washington Post national sports columnist. Look, you've been around a lot of these Super Bowls and seen these games. You were just at the college football playoff title game. I saw you there, talked with you there. College football feels like it's trying to create a Super Bowl-like event with that playoff and the title game. You know, the Super Bowl is talking about a longer season, more overseas games, Players Association saying, no, we don't want that. What's the healthy thing for the NFL to do? What's right for the game and Roger Goodell as it pertains to the season and the Super Bowl? Or are they in any jeopardy of college football taking a bite out of what they're doing?
No, they're not in any jeopardy of college football taking a bite out of what they're doing. You know, not until college football gets its act together and, like, actually creates things that have a realistic structure and stops worrying about, like, feeding the 5 or 6 different mafia families and just trying to negotiate peace. Like, that's what, I mean, everything in college football structure is clearly trying to keep the peace for as long as they can keep the peace with a bunch of people who are chaos agents. And eventually someone decides, I don't want to do this anymore. I want to be an arsonist. And then they have to start all over again. The NFL is not like that, right? Like, the NFL is the king. I think my concern with the NFL is don't go to an 18th game just for revenue. I think you've stretched out your players as far as they could possibly go. I wasn't in favor of 17 games. But I must admit that it's, in terms of health, it's been fine. I don't think they should go to an 18th game. I think, like, the beautiful thing about the NFL is just how tight the season is. The more that you make it sprawl, the harder I think it gets from an interest standpoint, from a audience fatigue standpoint, just from an overexposure standpoint, even though it's our national sporting obsession. I do like the idea of them. I think in terms of fairness, I think that's one of the reasons that they want to stretch out and play a slate of international games, you know, 16 games being all 32 teams have to play at least one game overseas. I think they're kind of trying to do that from a fairness standpoint, because then you could have, everyone would have 8 home games, 8 road games, 1 neutral game. And they get to kind of try to grow the game, although I must admit that it seems kind of silly to me to, you're going to grow the game, you know, not by getting necessarily more people from overseas teaching them how to play the game, but it's just like, hey, come watch us, like, because the world should love us as much as America loves us. That always seems a little bit silly to me, but do I want to go to Australia and cover an NFL game? Hell yeah, I do.
Jerry Brewer is with us. Jerry, you wrote a great piece about how cruel the Chiefs dynasty is and used Josh Allen as the vehicle to tell that story. Share with our readers, you know, how you feel about what the Bills might have been if not for Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I think about, like, what would the Blazers have been without Shaq and Kobe?
Yeah.
Right? I mean, I know there's one championship they would have won, and they probably would have won it if they could have just, you know, completed. I hate to bring up old misery for people, but if they had just held on to a 15-point lead in the fourth quarter,
right,
of a Western Conference Finals. But I think it's similar that you've just got something that's insurmountable, and you're a good team. You are a championship caliber team. I think about the Bills that way. I think about the Ravens that way. I think about what the Niners have been. If they don't get it done, I think about how good the Eagles have been, you know, in this new run. And it seems unfair, you know, that there is a Michael Jordan in the NFL that is going to keep legitimate teams, legitimate championship teams, from getting their fair share. I personally like dynasties. I respect what it takes to be great for that long. I do think that it propels the game forward. I do think, John, that if you create structures that allow owners to have leeway not to choose to be great, that they will conspire to create a mediocre product. And so therefore I think dynasties push the game forward because you're having to chase something great. But that said, like, it just, I really do feel for a Buffalo Bills who have done everything right, except for those four times that they've faced the Chiefs, you know, and one of them, Patrick Mahomes comes back on you in literal seconds when Josh Allen played one of the great quarterback playoff performances in history, and he still lost.
I keep thinking about Marv Levy too, because if you go back another generation on the Bills, I was in New York for that New Jersey Super Bowl, and I had lunch with Sally Jenkins, your colleague at the Post, and Marv Levy walks into the restaurant, Jerry, and he has to wait for a table. And I turned to Sally and I said, if he had won one, they would have ushered him right in and sat him right down. And instead, he just, you know, he looked like a 78-year-old man waiting for a table at the front door. It's just that margin is so thin. Help me with this, because you talk about the difference in leagues. The NBA, I thought about the NBA when you said, you know, if you allow teams to, you know, be mediocre, or the product's mediocre, but the trade deadline is more interesting than the regular season. What is it with the NBA and the trade deadline being such a big news event and shape-shifting event?
Well, I mean, nobody knows what the hell they're doing. They don't know how to build teams. and so they're constantly having to correct mistakes. And then some teams are trying to take advantage and go for it. I mean, one thing you have in the NFL you have in the NBA that's different than the NFL, that's different even from where baseball is going, where teams don't want to make deals for prospects in baseball this offseason because everybody thinks they're in it, right?
Yeah.
And in the NFL, everybody truly does believe they're in it. And now that they've added 14 playoff teams instead of 12, it makes it that much more difficult for you not to be a contender. But the NFL, the NBA still has a separation of powers in that you've got these sort of eight teams. You know, it used to be like three or four. Now I think it's more like eight that can at least squint their eyes and see themselves winning a championship. And they're the ones that are going for it.
Yeah.
But then at the bottom of the league, right, like you've got a ton of teams that just got no chance whatsoever. And what the NBA is doing now structurally with this new collective bargaining agreement and this new emphasis on the first and second aprons, and how not only are you playing luxury tax penalties, but there are also penalties in how you're able to like make deals and improve your team. Now it's like, it's really, really hard to make a trade. And I thought, you know, it's kind of funny to me, John, that Luka only got the Mavericks. The Mavericks deal Luka, and they get like what, one future first round pick?
Yeah.
And then on the other hand, you see like the 76ers are trading a first round pick just to dump a salary on the Washington Wizards. Like the only way you can get a first round pick now in the NBA is if you can absorb some salary that a team is trying to get rid of because they made a terrible financial decision. It strikes me that, like, as opposed to what it was under the old CBA, a lot of those deals were superstars trying to move, right? And other really good players and trying to make moves so that you would appease people like Giannis. I think about the Jrue Holiday deal, so that he'll want to stay. You know, now at this trade deadline, like some of the moves at the top of the arc were about trying to get better or trying to just improve your situation. But most of these moves, man, were about salary. Even the biggest move, the biggest stunner that we had, so much of that was like, I don't want to pay $345 million as the new owner of the Dallas Mavericks in a contract extension to a guy who's great, but I'm afraid that he like eats and drinks too much. Like that's the reality of the deal, right? Like, and that cost Luka like $120 million in a contract now because he's not supermax eligible. I just think that the NBA system is so ill thought, and the players were so stupid in signing it quickly, and the owners were so bad about, like, we want protection from ourselves, that they've created a mess. Now it's hard to dismantle your team, which is going to make bad teams stay bad for even longer, and it's hard to boost your team, which is going to make mediocre teams mediocre for even longer. And I don't think, John, that we're very far from seeing a day when a team could be a number one seed in the Eastern or Western Conference with like 49 wins. And I think Adam Silver would look at it and say, you know, if the best team in the NFL was 10-7, they'd be like, it's working the way it should. And you're going to punish us for having like a 49, 50, 51 win conference champion. And you know what I would say to him? I would say, Adam, that's an 82 game damn season that like you're asking people to like navigate versus one game a week for 4 months. So this level of like contrived parity just doesn't work in the NBA. And I think as they go further in this thing, we're going to be talking more and more about how the product just isn't as compelling as the level of stardom should make it.
The Blazers have a problem, and you're a Seattle guy. You're familiar with that market. You know what Paul Allen and Jody Allen and Burt Cold meant to the Seahawks. And, you know, Seahawks fans view Jody as one of them. She's a 12. But in Portland, people are waiting and counting the days that so when they sell the franchise. What does Portland look like to you as an NBA city right now, Jerry, from your vantage point?
One that's stuck, that's waiting for an ownership decision to be made. I mean, it doesn't look like there's any passion to do anything unless just the team builders, you know, get fortunate in what they're doing. I mean, they're in a very, very long building process. There just doesn't seem to be a lot of passion for making that team a winner as quickly as possible. And I don't blame Chauncey in the front office for that as much as I blame this holding pattern that they're in from an ownership standpoint. I think they'd be much better off. Like, I do not see Jody Allen, Burt Cole, when he's around, having the same passion for the Blazers that Paul Allen did.
No.
And that's okay, right? Like, you need to sell the team, though.
Yes. Yeah, right.
So, like, whatever. Yeah. Whatever it is from a tax standpoint or whatever, like the sooner you can sell that to someone who is going to come to the games with regularity and is going to have passion and is going to have opinions and is not just going to sit there and like look at a team that's winning 20-something games and look at a future that's got 20-something win teams for the next few years unless they get Cooper Flag or so, or some game changer like that. Until you have somebody who's just like, man, I've got like that Matt Ishbia level of passion, but hopefully more common sense, it's going to be tough. And it's a great, great basketball market. It's the one of those markets that David Stern was always in love with as he shaped the NBA, in that it's the only game in town, the only pro game in town. But, I mean, that's changing, obviously. I mean, it's the only Big Four pro game in town, but, you know, interests are changing in Portland, and there are more pro options, though none as big as the NBA. And you want to make sure that, like, for the new generation of Blazers fans, that you're able to capture them. And they're doing some things right. They're doing some things that deserve scrutinizing. But more than anything, they need somebody at the top directing them.
Jerry Brewer, Washington Post national sports columnist. He's in the Super Bowl city. Before you go, give me your pick. Eagles, Chiefs.
I am not going to go against Patrick Mahomes until he gives me something to... I mean, I wonder, like, how bad could it be for Mahomes for me not to believe in him?
Right.
Like, he's Tom Brady. He's 29 years old, and he's already Tom Brady level in that, like, 28-3 wasn't enough for you not to be afraid that yes. Tom Brady would come back. Mahomes is that caliber, and so I think they're going to make history, and I think we're gonna wake up on Monday and say, this dude with this crazy mohawk and this froggy voice has won 4 championships before his 30th birthday. How much more ownership of this league can he have?
Jerry Brewer, you're the best. Read him in the Washington Post. Follow him on social media. Jerry, thank you, man. I'll catch you down the road.
All right, anytime, man. Take care.
There he goes. Always love running into Jerry Brewer. Bumped into him at the college football playoff national championship. Have known him for decades. Appreciate his work and his friendship. He's not going against Patrick Mahomes. And you know what, Steven? I'm picking the Eagles, and I'm sitting here, and as he's saying that, I go, you know, he is kind of right. Like, you're betting against Patrick Mahomes. It's almost like back in the day betting against Don Shula.
That's, like, the one thing that I have going for me with the Chiefs. It's like, I want to pick the Eagles because I feel like they're better everywhere, but I can't pick against Patrick Mahomes. I've seen him beat too many teams, and it's not like he even has great games in the Super Bowl. Like, his Super Bowl stats aren't the best, but he never loses, and so I can't pick against him. I've just told myself I'm not going to pick against him in big-time games.
Well, we shall see how it goes down. I'll take your phone calls. I want your Super Bowl pick at 503-417-7575.